I believe that true education is really more of a custom tailored fit. Like, it is a program that is self-prescribed based upon your own personal experiences, and one that is really designed by you, tailored to fit your needs and your growth. I believe that it's your own personal extension, your own curriculum about what it means for you to be better, a better citizen, a better person personally, that internal work that you need to do to be better in this world.
Tennis legend Arthur Ashe said, "Start where you are, use what you have, do what you can." In the wake of nationwide protests that resulted from the death of an African-American at the knee of a white police officer, it is clear racism is deeply ingrained in the fabric of our country. However, it is also clear that many Americans want to confront racism in order to become a nation who values all of its citizens. Though conversations around racism are difficult, they are necessary if we want to make a significant impact. So, how can teachers start having conversations about racism in their building? Dr. Shantha Smith is an Equity and Excellence Coordinator and Instructional Lead Educator in Arlington, Virginia, where she works to transform school culture. She is dedicated to making her school a more equitable learning environment for all students by challenging staff to reflect on how their practice is informed by implicit bias and the impact it makes on students of color. In this episode, I have the pleasure to learn how Dr. Smith opens these conversations with colleagues, which challenges them to think in ways that take them beyond the curriculum. So at what point in your career did you realize that educators needed to understand racism, white supremacy, and how traditional educational structures support this?
You know, going through my background, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I went to D.C. public schools, and back then it was known as the Chocolate City. So I was in and surrounded by all people of color, teachers of color, growing up in Washington, D.C. And then I went to Virginia State University, which is a historically Black college. So again, I was once again surrounded by my people. And then I went into the world of work. I started in D.C. public schools and went to Prince George's public schools for the first couple years of my career. Again, once again, surrounded by predominantly African-American community, Hispanic community. And then I ventured about 12 years ago into a more urban, suburban, really suburban with urban students' needs, especially our students of color environment. And that is when it was like a culture shock to me. And I began to see that the way our children were performing, our students of color, our Black students that were performing, was a lot different. I began to see the mindsets of our teachers. We definitely have a predominantly white teaching staff. I mean, and you know, the statistics will tell you the teaching is about 82% white women. But when I came to this new district, it definitely was more white people. So then I got to see it in action and realize like the expectations that some teachers had weren't there, that the AP classes were, although I was in a predominantly minority school, were filled with predominantly white children. Mm. And so, I mean, when I talk to my students of color about their expectations and their future, it was like, oh, I'll just go to the community college. And I don't have a problem with community college, but that was all. There was no further planning. And it was just kind of like, that is where we belong versus I have options where I can be and go anywhere. It's kind of like you got relegated to the community college if you were a child of color. So it was these kinds of subtle things that I began to notice. I was in the ELA. My master's is in curriculum and instruction as a reading specialist. And so I was in the ELA World for most of my career. And I looked at the book list and I came in, it was 90% white, where the school is 70% minority. Why are we looking at a predominantly white male book list? So that's when I realized that people had no idea. I remember having a conversation with our department chair at the time. She said to me, you know, it's not like we don't look for people of color. We just can't find them. And I was astounded by that comment, especially coming from, we are very close to Washington, D.C. and Maryland. And they were all teachers of color. So, I mean, I just couldn't believe that in this very diverse area that we could not find qualified teachers of color to help to bring more voices into our into our instruction. So, I mean, that's to me when I first started to realize that something, this is such a different experience and something is wrong here. And I began to craft language around what actually was happening.
Those are things that we really need to be aware of. And like I've had conversations with my principal. I work in an area where we literally have 2% black population. And, you know, we have a, like even, I think we're like 5 or 6% Latino, and our school district does not represent. It's pretty white, and it's a shame that our kids don't get to learn from the people of color, from people from diverse communities. How can like a small area like mine be more intentional to bring people of color in?
You know that it really isn't. People of color's job to end the problem.
Right.
So really, it doesn't, even though it is great to have those people of color, I think that if the white people that were there or white people that are anywhere are engaged in the work and knowledgeable about the work and about implicit bias and really into making sure that they have access to the first text. I know that it's not realistic to always say that you're going to be able to have this large group of people of color so they have these experiences. But that's why we have books. they can be videos. I mean, we have to look for other ways if that is just not your reality. I mean, I know that there are some parts of the world that are very white, but our white children, as well as white educators, still need those experiences. So then we have to look for those alternative ways, because really that's how we create change, because our young people who are sitting in those seats will know what's going on in the world. Although they may not see it, they can experience it and live it. I don't know about you, but when I get into a good TV show and I'm starting to binge once watch something, I feel connected. Like, these are my people. I feel like I know them. If one of the main characters die, it feels like they were my family member. So if we entrench our students, especially our white students coming up, and our white teachers are engaged in the work, we can still have that same level of impact. Because what I wouldn't want to do is have people say, well, we can't find any people of color. So, because that deal again puts the onus on the people of color to lead or do the work. Mm-hmm. So really what needs to happen is the white people around you and everyone else need to do their work. I love Yala Van Sant, and that's one of her favorite quotes, is like, to do your work. Like, they need to do their work to get better and understand white supremacy, understand the long-term ramifications and impact that this structure, this system has had on people of color, and for me, especially Black people, and what it means to be Black in America. Because when children step outside of your world or your box, because they're going to go to other institutions around the world, or they will travel around the world. And when they see people of color, they won't expect them to be the help. They won't be the ones in the someone of color in a grocery store about what's on aisle 9 because they think they work there. You know, they will have had experiences and dialogues and conversations that they understand that that people of color are just as successful in America, that we're not relegated to one thing, that we are a dynamic group of people. They won't have those low expectations or be afraid of or fear people of color, because they will have learned and experienced a variety of people and know what it's like outside of their own particular world. You know, in the ELA world, we talk about windows and mirrors. We talk about letting students see into their own world as well as the world around them, and be able to, and sliding glass doors, and be able to step into both and really be knowledgeable and aware about somebody other than themselves.
Well, and you brought up implicit biases. And I think that's a really important thing for us to understand, is our own implicit biases. And implicit bias doesn't mean it's an overt bias. It's something that's inside that dictates kind of our decisions that we're completely unaware of. How is it that educators, especially white educators, how can we become more aware of our implicit bias, and why is that important?
Learning about your own implicit biases and understanding that it is at the subconscious level, it's not something that you do overtly, is so important, because we talk a lot about intention versus impact. Mm-hmm. It is the impact of what you are doing that is going to really continue to disenfranchise children of color, or continue to alienate or shame or make them not feel a place in this world because of your own implicit biases. It's a very dangerous thing. It's kind of like carbon monoxide. You don't see it, but it's lethal. It's deadly. I talk to educators about the power that they hold. So if you think about an educator holding the power to shape someone's life for 12 years, they have a direct hand in shaping and molding who this child will become and what they have access to, what they learn, the knowledge that they receive. And if your implicit biases are there left unchecked, you will be contributing to the silencing of our voices of color, the shaming, the continued marginalization of people of color inadvertently. But the impact of what you're doing is still there, and we will continue to have the same problems that we have. So it is extremely important that our teachers begin to learn about what it means to have implicit biases, and understand that if you begin to grow cognizant of those or have thought partners to check your biases, then that begins to help us change the narrative of America, because you're actually being intentional and thoughtful about the experiences that your students of color are having in your space and in your classroom. You know, I think that it's super important to really to identify those and to be open to hearing about those. I've had conversations with teachers because of students. Students will come to me and say, they always call on the white kids, or we were doing the same thing as the white girls and they didn't see them. They only saw us. That's a bias left unchecked.
Right.
Kids may not be able to always articulate exactly the experience, but they feel it. They feel they feel it and they see it. They always let the white girls go to the bathroom, the white boys go to the bathroom. As soon as I ask, it's no. That is your implicit biases. You're always looking at the children of color to cause a problem when their other kids may be doing the same exact thing. So imagine being in an environment or multiple environments as our high school and middle school students go through class after class after class, where that is your continued live experience. Of course, you don't feel like you want to be, don't want to be there. And you begin to develop this apathy for education, and don't feel like it's a safe space for you to be. And you kind of check out, because this room in classroom structure is not designed for you. It is very specific in the lens that the teacher is using, and who the information is crafted for, and who belongs and who doesn't belong becomes very clear to students of color. So it is definitely important that white educators be aware of their implicit biases and do the work to bring those to light, even because we know that it's not intentional, but it definitely is impactful. And you have that power to be a difference maker, or continue to keep this same narrative in educational structures going on and on and on.
Yeah. I remember it was about a year ago, I was introduced to the implicit bias test. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah. Yes, I take it. I ask our teachers to, in our white fragility group, to take it as a part of one of their assignments.
Yeah, I think that's such an important test. And I did that with my seniors this past year.
Okay.
And it was such an amazing series of conversations that we had that came out of that. And I think just it's a great way to start conversations with anybody. But the thing is people are afraid. And I know the first time I went to go take the test, I was scared to death. It's scary to, because there's that vulnerability to say, hey, I have these biases and where do I land? But I think it's such an important thing for us to do, to take that first step, even though it is scary. So how has opening up these conversations about racism with the teachers in your school helped transform your school? And more specifically, how has it impacted not only your teachers, but the learners in your school?
Well, I believe that opening up these conversations about racism has really brought a level of awareness. Our goal and a big part of the work that I do right now is just taking the taboo off of race and racial conversations. Because at one point we did this whole courageous conversations thing at my school. It was a district mandated courageous conversations where facilitators come in and we have these conversations about race. But the model was kind of like, once you've taken it, you've been knighted culturally competent in my mind, which obviously isn't sustainable or going to make the difference. To me, now where we are in the work is we are be able to have these conversations, and they're sustained, ongoing conversations around race, taking the taboo off of these conversations from the administrative level to the teacher leader level in the CLT. We have to have these conversations looking at the data and not being afraid or feel shame because someone's saying you're a bad person. And I told my principal years ago that teachers are they don't separate themselves, their personal self, from teaching. It is their identity. So when you begin to have these conversations, they feel that you're saying that they're a bad person. They're not saying that they don't hear what you're doing is may have a harmful impact. They're hearing, I am a bad person and I am doing this to my kids, and I wouldn't do that to my kids because I'm a good person and I came to this school because I want to make a difference. So being able to have those conversations in a sustained, safe way has really impacted the way we our curriculum. It has impacted the things that students have access to. It's began to really start to make a difference on how teachers view their work. And so that is a big part of what we are starting to see, that we actually were at a really pivotal point when our school shut down for the year, which makes me sad. And because we had just gotten to the point where we were engaged in whole staff learnings about equity. And one of the last professional developments we did, it was a powerful, moving experience for all of our staff members. And that's where the term white fragility came up. And I mean, the range of emotions in the room were so great because some of my white friends had never heard that term. So, of course, they took it very personally. There was eye rolling, teeth sucking, and our people of color were very passionate in telling about their experiences, even in our own building. And so from that, we actually started this White Fragility Book Club. And it has really, I mean, we are almost at a third of our staff being trained through this, something that was birthed out of our whole staff professional development. And so I really almost can't wait to go back because the minds have, like we talk about the matrix, the red pill, the blue pill, like they have taken the pill and they've chosen the pill and they cannot go back and unsee what they've seen. And they are eager, even now virtually, to make the difference for our students. I had one teacher email me, text me actually on Friday and say, it's important for me to make this. We're doing something about abolition, the abolitionists, and we're doing something about slavery, but it's important for me to make this connection to what's happening today. Would you look over my lesson and give me feedback? Chills. People who are going through this group are like, I need to be better for my students. This is an important part of the work. And we talk about being pro-Black and what it means to be pro-Black. So my message to him was, this is what it means to be pro-Black. I mean, to be able to have this conversation about race and racism with your students and design it yourself and really solicit feedback. I mean, this is the type of work that it takes to be able, that has been birthed over this year, several years process of being able to have these sustained conversations, get people to see there about, learn about implicit bias and learn about, white supremacy and to now to see that trickle into the classroom culture, to trickle into our curriculum, to trickle into now our virtual learning. It's been a powerful thing to see.
Mm. Wow. I love that you now have teachers opening up these conversations and then coming to you for because they want to make sure that they're communicating a message that honors their students, honors their community, honors Black people. I love hearing that. What can listeners do [S2] Absolutely. [S1] To start conversations about racism, white supremacy in their school? What do you recommend teachers who want to open these conversations do? And why is it important for white teachers to be the ones that begin these conversations?
You know, what listeners can do to start the conversations, and I've actually had a couple conversations. You have to start where you are. I know we all desire to see change and see change happen right away, but it rarely ever happens like that. You know, you have to get to that tipping point. And I feel like after 4 years, we're getting to that like tipping point where eventually, if you are one of the teachers who are not able to have these conversations, who are not engaged in the work, then our school won't be the place for you to be because you will feel out of place. You know, right now, it may be at a place where you can hide and find your group of people who you can still say, it's not me, it's them, or, oh, it's the kids. You may be able to hide, but eventually our goal is to create that tipping point where you won't feel safe in our environment because you'll be that person who says, oh, why do they make everything about race? This isn't my place and these aren't my people. So what you can do is start where you are, whether it's a book club, whether it's a small professional development. It could be just your CLT, your collaborative learning team, like reading a book together.
What would be your top recommendation? Maybe books that educators could start book studies around?
So there are a lot of different books that I would recommend and resources that I would recommend for teachers. White Fragility, that book, it's been a powerful book because it has been a teaching tool for our white colleagues to learn about white supremacy and separating themselves from, yes, you can be a good person and still commit racist acts. And so I think that has been a powerful and transformational tool. I love the book, The New Jim Crow, Stamp, Anti-Racism and You. That's the one for young readers with Jason Reynolds. That's an excellent book. And it's also one that you can use with your students. Joretta Hammond's Culturally Responsive Teaching in the Brain is another great resource.
I also really like the website Teaching Tolerance. And one of the reasons I really like Teaching Tolerance is because they even have a lot of classroom resources, but specifically they have standards for social justice as well as teaching strategies. They have a part called Perspective Text that definitely gives you text from a variety of voices, people of color, and that's especially critical as we decolonize our curriculum. Another resource I use with my district is America to Me. And I found that the America to Me series was very helpful for teachers to have dialogues about race, looking at a reality show of a secondary high school. It actually really mirrored my district racially as well as economically. So it's a really great chance for us to open those dialogues that can be hard and difficult, looking at someone else and then bringing it to ourselves. Sometimes it's easier to look outside of ourselves before we begin to talk about, okay, now how does this relate to us? Those are just a lot of resources. There are a plethora of resources out there. I think what's most important, immerse yourself in it and get started. You know, a lot of times when we give people too many things, then they do nothing because it can be overwhelming. So just start with you, where you are, with what you have, with who's willing. And I think that is the most powerful way so that we can all begin to heal as a country.
People go into education because they want to inspire and make a difference. But when schools are designed to sort children and support racial hierarchies, our influence will only go so far. Teachers need to be bold. They need to be willing to understand America's historical love affair with racism and reflect on its effect today in order for us to envision how we can change tomorrow. For more information about Dr. Smith and the resources she mentioned, visit beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com and check out the show notes. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to hit the subscribe button as you will want to catch every episode. And remember to leave a rating and review. I appreciate your support, and it helps people find the show. I'd like to encourage you to partner with me through my Patreon page. Your donation will help offset the cost of producing this podcast and bring more meaningful opportunities that take learners beyond the curriculum.